about the following topic. As we are, I think, all familiar, there was a firebomb attack in the Palestinian village of Douma, in which several people were killed, including an infant child. As a result of that, there were a variety of people, the Hilltop Youth, who were taken into custody by the Shin Bet, Israel's Homeland Security Department, I guess, for lack of a better translation, and where they were for about 30 days or so. They were, during that time, they were interrogated. There were various accusations during that time that they were, that while they were there, they were tortured or at least interrogated with some sort of with some physical force, physical violence that was directed towards them. Those accusations were made. In response, the Shin Bet claims that they were not really tortured. There are people that looked at them. There are some different perspectives as far as what did and didn't happen. What we will do tonight is to try and give some of the background, some of the understanding in terms of this issue as a whole, what exactly the status of torturing or interrogating with real sort of physical force prisoners. We're going to, in light of that, talk a little bit about the question as a whole. We'll talk in light of that also. We'll try and focus on this particular issue and where things are at. Let's try and get started with the following. Okay. In general, whenever you deal with questions like this, any questions about wartime ethics, any halakhas of milchama and the like, we are always at a disadvantage. The reason why we are always at a disadvantage is because historically, Klal Yisrael did not have, we have not had an army for a very long time. We have not had to struggle with these shilohs for a very long time. If you want to look at two examples of people from different contexts describing this, Rasha Weiss, Mechsas Sher, and Sefer Dvarim, points out in one context of Hilchos Milchama, he says, Amnam halacha zo, whatever he's speaking about there. Lo masinu b'dibri ha-gemar v'ha-poskim, el b'tanach u'v'mim farshav. Sometimes when you're learning these halachas about what you can do in wartime, what you can do with prisoners and what you can't do, you don't always have it because the Gemara is you have to look in Tanakh and Tefarshim. V'zos mishum shemi'as chorban beis mikdashenu v'vito machos Yisrael, lo hayu she'elos eila nogos l'maisa. These questions were not always applicable for Klal Yisrael. U'miyato la'aso b'sugyas eila shel milcham of ofen nihula. People were not really that much going to be done in a lot of these questions. They didn't come up. And therefore we have to look. So what's appropriate in wartime, what's not? So we can't always look at the classical Rishonim, classical poskim that we would normally look at for some of these halachas because it just didn't come up that much. So suddenly when Klal Yisrael comes back in 1948, we suddenly have an army. So we have a lot of new shilohs that come up, but it becomes complicated to be able to pin down what exactly we hold. And sometimes you're looking to Mekoros, we would not normally go off of. So for example, in discussions about civilian casualties, do we care when we're in the middle of a war, to what extent should it bother us if there are going to be civilian casualties? So one of the Mekoros that gets quoted often in that sugya is in Maharal and his parish in Chumash and Gur Aryeh. That's not often where we go. The Maharal is quoted a couple times in a lot of context. It's not often where we go for halacha, but he's someone who talks about it. He gives us something to work off of. In verse number 2, Professor Michael Walter says it again in a little bit of a different way. This is one of the meanings of exile. Jews are the victims, not the agents of war. And without a state or an army, they are also not the theorists of war. Because we were more the victim than the ones that were initiating battle, because we were more the ones, unfortunately, being interrogated than the ones leading the interrogation, so we're not going to have that much of a discussion about what comes up. Just like as an example, it's not shocking that if the Mikdash was built today, we would not have a lot to say as far as some of the halacha lemaisa questions about karbanos. We'd have to go back to Chazal, go back to some of the Rishonim. We don't have the standard poskim. We're not dealing as much with practical halacha lemaisa kachim issues or practical halacha lemaisa taros issues. We tend to deal with the issues in poskim that are practical. And what happens is when a new reality comes and suddenly this should become a bit more practical, so we struggle a bit and we have to try to do our best to be able to understand things as well as possible. So the sugya of torturing terrorists, in this year in general, we always try to focus more on contemporary discussions. But we don't have a lot to work off of. We do have some Gemaras. Dovid Rav points out, we have a Gemara even in the second parak of Matzia, which has to do with confessions and whether you can force a confession. But we don't have a lot as far as classical Gemara Rishonim Poskim to work off of. We're not even really sure, as often happens, sometimes in newer Shilas, we don't even know, so where's the starting point? It's like, as an example, brain death. Major Shila in Halacha, what's defined as death? When the Shilas come up and Poskim talk about it, so we're not even always sure, especially in the beginning, where are the main sources I'm working off of? Where are the main Gemaras? Where am I looking to get certain opinions? It's not always as abundantly clear. So let's try it. There are three potential sources amongst those who are on the pro-torture side, we'll say in that kind of way, those that are more comfortable with there being some form of torture. We'll try to develop three mahalchim. One mahalach, the first one will come from the Shilas and Tuvos recorded in last week, of Rav Dov Lior. Dov Lior is the former chief rabbi of Kiryat Arba. He was Rashiva of the Hezdei Yeshiva there. He's one of the Gedolei HaPoskim in the Tzioni world. Nowadays, a little bit of an out-of-the-box figure, very much to the right, as far as... interesting story. I think he was a survivor. I think his parents were Belzer Hasidim. But I think they were... And at some point, he ended up where he is now. And he's a giant of a posek. In Shilas Tshuvas Devar Chevron, the third chelik of his tshuvas. His tshuvas are all about Yoredeya. They are very interesting. He has a lot on Eretz Yisrael, a lot on Hochos Mochama. Those are the questions that, again, you're struggling with now, and as you often have less to work off of. In the question of, he has a tshuva there about interrogating prisoners, and whether in interrogating prisoners, things like torture are ever allowed. He maintains as follows. For him, the primary source, the primary place I'm looking, as far as if it's okay or not, is the Sugya Masech Sanhedrin. That is the Gemara in Masech Sanhedrin, on Daf Mem Vav. The Gemara tells us there, Beis Din Makan Ve'onshin Shloman HaTorah V'Shlolavor Al Divrei Torah El Alasos Siyag HaTorah. Beis Din is given a certain kind of power. Beis Din has the power, the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, to punish at times. Beis Din has the power to punish, even if strictly speaking, according to Halacha, they are not really, a certain person is not really Chai of Misa. A person Chai of Misa, Beis Din, if they believe that it is important or necessary for whatever purpose, Beis Din has that capacity to give out punishments to those that, not strictly speaking, deserve it, based on other halachic principles. It's a koach of Beis Din. It's a koach of Beis Din. That is why, so he points out there to what extent, for him, the shaila of, can we torture? So maybe these people strictly, right now, have not done enough to be deserving of that particular punishment. To what extent does Beis Din have the power to give that punishment anyway, if they view it as significant? Again, we're doing it in order to get information out, but to what extent are they allowed to do that to someone if they view it as being something which is valuable? So he points out that the Chiddush Rambam and Hedron thinks that only if a Beis Din has smicha, Beis Din smuchin, only they can do some of these things. Bizman hazeh, we do not have smicha, formal, halachic smicha, from Moshe Rabbeinu, what we have nowadays is more of a heter hora, permission to paskin. But because that's the case, says, for the Chiddush Rambam, maybe you couldn't invoke it nowadays. If it's a mutter al pidin, you can't do it. However, he points out from the Torah and some other poskim that the dominant view appears to be that Beis Din has a certain degree of power, a power even if they don't have smicha, to issue, to give certain punishments, to inflict pain upon people, if they view that as being necessary. They view it as being necessary. Well, guys, this is all just the theory. The practice is going to be based on some other issues. So he points out some qualifications. The Rambam writes in the Sanhedrin, in the end of Perek Chavdalet, that those who are ever giving out punishments from Beis Din should do so l'shem shamayim. They should do so not because they are violent or vindictive. They should do so not because they want to inflict pain on others, because they enjoy that. They should do it because they're doing it l'shem shamayim. They firmly believe it is in the best interest of the Jewish people, and that is why they're doing it, for no other reason. So even if it's okay, it has to be people that are doing it in a somewhat appropriate way. But for Rav Dov Lior, that is the sugya that we are looking at. Rav Dov Lior argues that it is okay to do it. Is okay to do it. Beis Din has the power. He thinks, he writes there explicitly in his tshuva, that this could be true also when it comes to Jews or non-Jews. There's no chiluk as far as what Beis Din has the koach to do, what they can get away with as far as the interrogating. He happens to think in the current climate, it would even be justified. This is, again, Rav Dov Lior. Rav Dov Lior thinks it would even be justified. Let me get it here. When it comes to real terrorists who are trying to do things against the state, again, Whether those terrorists are Jews or non-Jews, La Dafka, there should be a difference. If they're trying to under the Seder Shiva spoke today after Mincha a little bit about some of the motivation of even some Jews who are trying to do things to damage the state. It could still be valuable since over your vaday she yesh lahatil aleihem ema upachad mikan lahaba milif goa biyisrael bechol derech shehi. Whatever we could do to try and prevent, to send a message, do not do this, because no, if you get caught, things like this may be done to you. Rav Dov Lior says is totally justified. That is mahalach number one. One reason why. He's looking, what's my main sugya? Sugya in Sanhedrin, based in Makim, based on the koach, to give punishments, even though strictly speaking it's not justified, that's for him okay. That question came up, by the way, I think one time it came up when the Supreme Court of Israel, Israel has only given the death penalty once, and that was to Eichmann. And I believe around then, Professor Menachem Alon, some of the Mishpat Ivri people published tshuvas about whether it was okay for Israel to give the death penalty to anybody. We don't have a Sanhedrin nowadays. It wasn't given according to Al Pi Din, as far as Hasra and the kinds of things that are strictly speaking required for a Chiyuv Misa. So part of the question was, to what extent does Beis Din really have power? Even in times of Rishon and post, was this ever done? Does Beis Din really have power to punish people? Even if, strictly speaking, that they're not really Chayav Misa. That's number one. Mahalach number two, let's get the Mahalach out. Mahalach number two, Rabbi J. David Blythe. Right, Blythe is a major Talmud Chacham. He is he's a Rosh Yeshiva and Rosh Kolel in YU. He is the Rosh Kolel of the Dayanus Kolel. He has published, he's a prolific author in Talmud Chacham. He has about four volumes of Svarim in Hebrew, another, at least off the top of my head, nine volumes in English. He has in halacha. He has a lot contemporary. He has a lot in terms of halacha. He's written hundreds of articles on different places. Right, Blythe is also this is what makes him unique. Not only is he a major Talmud Chacham as far as halacha goes, he happens to also be someone with a very, very strong background and a PhD in medieval Jewish philosophy. He's a giant of Talmud Chacham. He's also a professor in Cardoza. He's fantastic. So he wrote an article in Tradition on torture and the ticking time bomb. One of the questions that came up as far as torture, if you want to really get the case, this is probably that those of us familiar with certain TV shows or movies, I imagine this is when torture gets used more often, is the equivalent to the ticking time bomb. What's the ticking time bomb? There's a bomb that is, it may really go off. And there's someone here with information. And to what extent is it okay to torture that person if we need to get the information out? We'll speak in a little bit whether it's effective. Strictly speaking, is it okay? So Rabbi Blythe, when Rabbi Blythe is looking at this question, where he's looking is not in terms of the halachas of the koach of Beis Din. What he's, because again, that's going to only work as far as the state and the Shin Bet doing it. Rabbi Blythe looks somewhere else. He looks in the eighth parak of Masechah Sanhedrin, the halachas of Rodef. Halachas of Rodef, if someone is trying to kill someone, so you are allowed to stop that person from committing murder. That's a sugya in the eighth parak of Masechah Sanhedrin, Rodef. We happen to believe, Rabbi points out, this is different than in certain secular climates. Rabbi points out, we believe if I see someone who's about to kill someone else, I have an obligation to even intervene. Again, question if it's going to put my own life at risk is different shaila. But at Losan Adam Riacha, Rodef, I'm allowed to kill him. I may have an obligation to get involved and try and stop that person from killing someone. That may be an obligation that I have. Rabbi Blythe points out, so Lechor Rodef is a place to go. However, applying Rodef here, says Rabbi Blythe, is going to require a little bit of a jump. Why? Rodef, classic Rodef, you have a guy who's holding a knife and is about to stab someone. He is active. He's trying to kill someone. That's one kind of Rodef. Would we say Rodef when the person right now is actually passive? There's a ticking time bomb. The person is just passive. They're really not doing anything right now. Is that also halachically called a rodef? Do I have a heter to torture that person? Is he called a rodef or not? That's also part of the shaila. Some of us may know in another sort of issue where rodef comes up, also based in Sanhedrin, is the shaila of abortion. You have a baby that is threatening the life of the mother. So there, but that's a baby. That baby is also somewhat passive. But again, not as passive as, in an odd way of saying it, not as passive as a terrorist sitting on the side of the room who's doing nothing right now. When do we extend the halachas of rode? So if I want to argue that it's okay for me to torture someone, just like I'm allowed to kill him, to do whatever I can, if I can kill him, kal v'chomer, I can torture, in order to be able to get the information out, so is that going to be okay or not going to be okay? So Rabbi Blei points out, I have to understand, can I take that jump as far as Rodef goes? Rabbi Blei points out the Netziv, in Emek She'ela, in his commentary, in the She'iltos, Rabbi Chai Gaon, that the Netziv assumes as a Dover Pashat, that Rodef would apply even there. So I'm allowed to engage in torture, because Rodef applies in that context. That's my second model. Why can I do it? Either the Koach of Beisdin, or number two, the Halacha of Rodef. Third model, and then we'll just... Dine Milchama. Lots of things are allowed in wartime that are not allowed in other circumstances. What's an example? What's allowed in wartime now in other circumstances? Let's go to just a simple example. Rav Dov Lior points this out in one of the different tshuva in that piece. In the middle of wartime, normally Geneva is not allowed. I can't steal from non-Jews either. Let's say it's the middle of a war and you're in an area. And you want to use the property of someone there. I want to use the property. I want to take the food from someone there. I'm very hungry or thirsty. I want to steal food from them. Gnevas nisar d'oraisa. Bishas milchama, in a time of war, that may be okay. I'll give the most basic and clear example where we see that wartime has exceptions. Murder. Lo sirtzach is not allowed. I think we would all get how, in the context of milchama, somehow what is and isn't allowed suddenly shifts a little bit. The Minchas Chinuch famously pointed out in the context of Pikuach Nefesh. The Minchas Chinuch thinks that some of the normal halakas of Pikuach Nefesh do not apply in the context of wartime. That Shaila is like, in Bishas Milchama, we're less concerned with Pikuach Nefesh. People are always sent in very dangerous, life-threatening missions. That's part of Milchama. That comes up in discussions, which we're not talking about now, land for peace. To Washington, if it will save lives, do we give up land? Part of the shaila is how much is pikuach nefesh an important factor or not? Because it's Shas Milchama, and in Shas Milchama, things like murder are okay. So you have those who maintain, a good, clear example of it in a bunch of different articles, by Michael Broyd, source number 5. In a couple of different articles, he's argued this very, very strongly, that there's no reason why torture would not be okay from a Jewish perspective in Shas Milchama. If killing is okay in the time of war, why would torture not be okay? According to Jewish law and ethics, torture in the context of war is no more problematic than death itself, and is permitted by the general license to wage war. There is no logical reason that halacha would categorically prohibit duly authorized wartime torture as a method for acquiring information otherwise not available in order to save lives in the future. What we have so far is as follows. 3 different reasons why engaging in some form of torture would be okay. There may be nafkamina between them, either because Beis Din, or in this case the state, has the koach to do it with Dovli Or's model, or because these guys are viewed as rodfim, even though they're not the one pushing the button, just because they know information, halachically, he's still called a rodef, you can torture him. Or number 3, bishas milchama, in a time of war, you have more flexibility. That's all that. You would now have 2 steps to go as far as its implementation. Step number 1, are these things true? Do all poskim believe that these are 3 models to look at? Are you sure there's really a rodef here? Are you sure that everything's really okay with Shas Milchama? How do you call Shas Milchama? What's called Shas Milchama? That's always a question. How do I know what is and what isn't called a time of war? What's called Milchama? How do I know what's called? When does Beis Din or Beis Din not have the koach, makan ve'onshin, shalom and hadin? When does Beis Din have the power to do that? When are these things okay and when are these things not okay? Those are all questions to struggle with these. Does everyone buy that these things are true? You have a secondary question. Even if it is strictly speaking mutter, should you do it? Should you do it? Whose call should it be? What are the factors to whether you should do it? Let's say it's mutter. Beis has a call to do it. The state has a call to do it. What are the factors that play in terms of whether it should be done? Now you know it's mutter. What would be a factor?
If you know for sure that not mutter, don't do it.
Okay. What's the level of threat? That's one shaila. The ticking time bomb or not? I want to get some information. That's one potential issue. Because I may get something in a year from now that'll be helpful. Or there's really like a ticking time. How do I define imminent threat? For sure, if I'm working off of a rodef kind of an idea, I may need more of a direct kind of a threat. One issue. Anything else?
Fallout.
The fallout from it. Here's a big one. just because it may be okay, maybe I should be scared with the fallout from it. If you look at source number 6, a nice article from Rav Aryeh Klapper from Boston. Torah does not support torture. Rav Henkin in Shal Tshuvas B'nei Ban, Mechil Gimel, I believe it's a similar idea. Does the Chil Hashem piece matter at all? Does it matter at all the message that we're sending Klapei Chutz for Klal Yisrael? Is that all a factor? Endorsing torture fundamentally desecrates God's name. The role of Judaism is to raise moral standards in the world, not to legitimate a lowest moral common denominator. Should it be a factor for us that we are essentially doing this? It looks terrible for Klal Yisrael. It looks terrible for Klal Yisrael. Should that be a factor at all? The fallout and then how we're going to look? Maybe it's mutter, maybe we shouldn't do it. Any other reasons why not? Maybe it doesn't work. We're not vindictive. We're not people that just want to, you know, engage in violence. I want to know, if I'm going to engage in it, does it work? Does it work? Whose call is it going to be if it works then? We decided it's mutter. Is it right, Broid? Just because it's mutter doesn't mean it's wise. Who should decide if we're going to do it or not then?
The people doing it.
The people who are the shinbet, people who are more knowledgeable about this. People that have researched and studied whether torture works or not. People that have been in the room. People that know the information you get or don't get from it. So for a broid, the question is going to be, it's not a question of, even if it's mutter, is it wise? Is it wise? Does it actually work? We've got Yaakov Ariel about this parsha of the Shin Bet, talking about Yaakov Ariel said, we don't have to talk about whether it would be mutter or not. It may not be effective. If it's not effective, there's nothing to speak about. You can't hurt someone if it's not going to accomplish anything. So in certain contexts, Rav Dov Lior may say, even if it won't be effective as far as giving us information, it may be effective as far as? A deterrent. Now, that's also tricky. Is it a good deterrent or not a good deterrent? Let's give an example. Let's get some politics here. There is a prison located in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. What's that? What goes on in that prison?
We don't know.
We don't know. There are people that are there who have never really had a formal kind of a trial. They are just there in Guantanamo Bay. Now, what happens there, we really don't know. I'm not taking sides in a political question. I would ask the following question. I would imagine that anyone thinking about whether it's a good or bad thing would ask a question like, does it accomplish whatever we want it to accomplish? Is it net good or bad for the United States of America? Is it good because it puts away some very, very bad people? Is it good because it has the potential to serve as some sort of a deterrent? Could you argue it's bad because of the message it sends? Maybe it's something which is used as far as showing how America is so terrible. Maybe it's a motivator as far as enemies. Morale is always going to be a piece of the puzzle also. When you deal with torture, so one of the questions is going to be, what is the fallout? Will it deter others? Or is it possible it will strengthen others? Why would it strengthen others? Because it has the potential to become a motivational technique. Whether it does or doesn't, be Guantanamo Bay or this, I would imagine the best people to decide it are not the Rebbeim and Yeshivat Shalvim, but those that have know something about any of the issues going on here. But I think those at least are going to be some of the questions that you're going to have to talk about. That is all some of the background. I want to now shift to the third stage. What we did so far is as follows. Number one, we spoke about some of the background, the challenge, the lack of primary sources, and figuring some of these things out. The second thing that we spoke about has to do with developing, where am I looking as far as pinning down different shitas? What am I really going to be talking about as far as trying to clarify a torture, okay, not okay? A stick in Sanhedrin, a question of Rodef, a question of Shas Mochama, that may have certain nafkaminas. Why I wouldn't want to do this, even if those arguments are right, which may not be so pasha, do I want to for sure invoke it or not? Will it be productive or not be productive is always going to be a question. Again, I imagine, I think there are people who claim, I remember where I saw that. Did Obama make this point? I forget who made this point. All about how, like, I'm sorry for the TV reference, for those that are uncomfortable with it, that, like Jack Bauer has convinced people that torture works. Because, like, no, it's pashut, it works. Like, we saw it on TV a lot. So, like, now, All we saw right now is that it may have been mutter to do it. I don't know. Definitely like threatening to kill like someone's children somewhere else strike me as like a bit, you know, intense. But yeah, may strictly speaking be totally mutter. No idea. But we all believe it works. Like that's like what, no, like I'm telling you. So there's always point to like remind ourselves, you know, like what we got and didn't get from TV and what was or wasn't accurate. Like, I have no idea if torture works. I just know that I shouldn't base it on what I saw on in 24. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. I imagine it would be better for me that if I read an article or I read those that researched the topic as far as clarifying some of that. But that's all going to be the background. What now comes to our case? Our case now becomes a bit more contemporary. Our case where we're dealing with people who are, you know, taken to custody by the Shin Bet, who are, I think it's pretty much accepted, were roughed up a bit. Anyone deny they're roughed up a bit? Can I get something like that? That's pretty simple, right? They're definitely roughed up a bit. The question of whether it was more than a bit and what was done and what wasn't done, that I think is an open question. My understanding from, yeah, like secondhand information is that they were definitely at least roughed up a bit. How do people react now? This becomes interesting. How do you react? People wearing yarmulkes and tzitzis who are accused of acts of, for lack of a better term, of terrorism or of murder, who are going to be maybe not formally accused, but understood to be somewhat connected. And to what extent is it going to be okay or is it not going to be okay to, again, to engage in some form of torture to them? And how are different rabbanim going to react to it? I think we find, I have on the sheet in sources 7, 8, and 9, three different perspectives. Even these people that we're quoting have said other things also. I'm quoting them here to give you just three sort of like perspectives. One mehalach, if you look in source number 7, Reb Zalman Melamed, who is the Rosh Shiva of the Yeshiva Gavoa in Beit El, one of the giants of the Tzioni world. He's looked at as far as he's involved in politics. Also, he's looked at as a real leader in the Tzioni world. He wrote a letter to members of the Knesset, affiliated with Bayit Yehudi, the Religious Zionist Party, where he wrote that Zeyamim she'ein menuchel nafshi, I haven't been able to rest or sleep for a bunch of days, and there are many people like me, after hearing what's going on to those who are being accused in the Duma Parsha. These people are not chayiv misa. Whoever lit the fire, and it may even be some of them, are not deserving of the punishment they're getting. And what's happening right now is you have people, the way he views it, pikuach nefesh mamish. They're being tortured, they're being beat up in prison, they haven't had access to it. At least in the beginning, they didn't really have access to lawyers, there were no formal accusations, we don't know what's happening to them. There were shmuas that at least one of them attempted to commit suicide, and said he wants to commit suicide, it's life or death. He wrote to the Knesset members, get something done. This is a shaila pikuach nefesh. Rav Dov Lior Paskind, for the lawyer of these guys, he was allowed to, at least on a derabbanan level, to be mechalal Shabbos, to try to get these guys out. It's a real hilchos Shabbos kind of, it's a real pikuach nefesh kind of a shaila. This is something we should be very concerned about. There are people protesting what was going on. That's one school of thought. Now, at least there were some rabbanim who challenged Rav Dov Lior on the Chilul Shabbos point. I'll just note one quick thing in parentheses. The Rav who most loudly challenged Rav Dov Lior on Chilul Shabbos, after he challenged him, point out at the end that maybe he didn't have all the metzias correctly down pat. I would just suggest that one who challenges someone, it may be appropriate to have the metzias down pat before you challenge them. That just strikes me as something which is appropriate. If you're arguing with a giant of a posek who has volumes of tshuvas, it may at least be worthwhile to say confidently, I have all the facts. Not, he said that and he's wrong, but it could be he knows more than I know about the details. So, strikes me as worthy of hesitation, but I'm a little bit of a, I get nervous about things. The second mahalach is the one that Rav Aviner took. Rav Aviner, now this one's interesting. In the Tzioni world, a lot of even the prominent Rabbanim respond, Rav Aviner responds to text messages. I think hundreds a day of text messages on Shuvas, and there's a svar amount of his text messages on Shuvas, all gets up. Rav Yaakov Ariel, one of the giant postmen also, he responds to online questions. It's an amazing thing that like the extent to which they're up to date with certain like current event situations, you want to know what they think about it. So within like 2 days, they're all out there. As opposed to sometimes where you have to like figure out what does he think about, what does he think about it. It's a community. It's one of the beautiful things about this world. It's a community where they're abundant. You sort of know what they think. It's not one of these things where like, and they like write it themselves. You're not trying to like figure out from some like third hand thing like what does this person hold about X. Like they saw the question, they wrote an answer. Someone asked like a follow up question. They then like responded to the follow up question. It's an amazing thing where you really get sort of what they think. Rav Aviner, okay. They say that they were tortured. Says Rav Aviner, Gam be'inyan hazeh einenu yodim, v'yamash lo yodim lo midabrim. We do not really know what is happening. So if we don't know what's happening, we can't talk about it. We can't participate in protest if we don't really know what was happening. Rav Aviner with a degree of humility. Now there are certain hashkafic undertones if you are really holding the details between Rav Aviner's influences and Rav Melamed's and some Rav Dov Lior's. That's like a difference of opinion within the Tzioni world. Not at all for now. But Rav Aviner is saying, be very cautious before you critique the state. We don't know. We don't know. Understand also that Shin Bet's doing a lot of great things for Klal Yisrael. They're protecting us. So before we start judging them, before we start critiquing them, let's find out some details first. Only then start to... We want to make sure everyone's taken care of. I may want to make sure they have a lawyer who's on top... But to cut them some slack and to not be so negative and to not call unnecessarily, we don't really know what's going on. Don't participate in the protests because the protests are saying the Shin Bet's terrible, the Medina's terrible, and that's not true. That's not true. Says Rav Aviner, we don't really know enough about this case to be able to comfortably have an opinion on the topic. Rav Yaakov Ariel, the chief rabbi of Ramat Gan, Rav Yaakov Ariel also responded to it. And this was how he responded. He was asked the following question. Should we really be treating Jewish terrorists, quote unquote, the same way that we treat other terrorists here? Should we be treating them all the same? Are Jewish terrorists unique? So it's almost like when you're asking that question, you're setting up to the fact that we should be more makel with Jewish terrorists. Dr. Riel says, you know, strictly speaking, you know, harigas goy asur me'atorah, it's also to kill a non-Jew. Mibchina misuyem, from a certain perspective, Yehudi rotzeach chamor yoser. It's worse. A Jewish terrorist is worse. Why? Harihu mechuyav l'torah ha'oseres zos behem. Because the Torah, he's going against Torah. He's bound by a higher standard. He's bound by a Torah that he rejects. So he may be in a worse position. Now, as far as some of the torture goes, forcing confessions and like, everyone says, I don't think it works. I don't think we should do it. But if you want to assess from a certain perspective, if people are guilty of these crimes, so people who are guilty of these crimes should be treated harshly. Again, severely, but it was terrible. Whether the torture makes it directly on the same point, whether you should be doing any of these things, whether they're okay or not okay, it's not even effective. If it's not even effective, it shouldn't be done. So we're always trying to, on this particular kind of a question, balance two things. We're trying to balance the question of what's okay, and we're trying to balance the question of and does it make sense even if it is okay? And when we talk about does it make sense even if it is okay, so you have the question of who should be deciding that. Is it the way Rabbi Broid said a question for the people who are experts in the field? Is that no? It's a Chil Hashem question. It's a question of whether or not the Torah has a say. Not just whether it's okay, but whether it's appropriate. The Torah can say certain things are inappropriate, or certain things are appropriate. Who should be making that call is another kind of question. But what we spoke about tonight, we'll chazer right now, and maybe 1 or 2 minutes early. What we spoke about tonight was a very important shaila going on nowadays, the question of torture. How exactly do we relate to things when we are interrogating? What are the halakhas of it? A wild question that Klal Yisrael rarely had historically that now we are struggling with. Just to end with something that Rav Lichtenstein pointed out, it's in source number 10. Rav Aaron pointed out, this is in a journal called Tchumen, a very well-known journal put out by Tzomet. So in Tchumen, one of the early volumes, Rav Aaron was talking about war there. He pointed out in general, and this is the last point, is a famous one from Golda Meir, that when you're assessing war, you have to always factor in three things, Rav Aaron said. One is the sacrifices on your side. What are you giving up when you engage in certain war? That's always a factor. Second is the question of the sacrifices on their side. There are people with Tzelem Elokim who are going to be killed. That has to be a factor. How much of a factor? That's a shaila. But it has to be a factor, I think is certainly true. Balance is the third factor in war, and that factor, I think, relates a lot to what we're talking about here. We also have to introduce the question of what kind of a toll does this take on Klal Yisrael? What kind of a toll does this take on us? These are the things that we're doing. That's the Golden Meir line. That one thing we can never forgive is the fact that you turned our children into, that our children had to kill your children. The impact it has on us is something which is very powerful. And to engage in these kinds of acts, even if they are at times appropriate, and that's a very heavy question, that's a question which is a very major question. Even if it is appropriate at times to engage in some of this, for us to try to understand, it takes a toll. It takes a toll on who we are. And that's what Rav Dov Lior pointed out. Even if it has to be done, never in a violent way, like the Rambam writes up in Sanhedrin, done by people acting with shame shemayim, which daven that all of these shilas become totally, once again, unnecessary, but not because we are, as we said earlier, the victims, but because we emerge victorious, and that all of the battles with the geula, as Hashem coming our way, all be finalized, and Klal Yisrael should be in a wonderful position. So, guys, have a great night.